Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana for joining me. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Heather Painter. Heather is Dagitan Athabascan. She is part of the Alaska Therapeutic Courts and advocates for Native recovery. She represents strong Native women in recovery and has been sober for over 5 years. On this show, Heather courageously shares her story to uplift our Indigenous relatives. So guys, please help me welcome Heather Painter. Hi, Heather. How are you?
I'm doing great, Ralph. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing good. So you just had a recent milestone in December. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I celebrated 5 years in recovery from alcohol and street drugs, and I've been clean and sober for over 5 years now, and also recovering from my mental health.
Oh, that's amazing. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself for our listeners to get to know you, please?
Yes, my name is Heather Painter. I am Dagitan Athabascan. I'm still learning how to pronounce that. You know, I've been on also this journey of like learning more about my culture and who I am and where I fit in that piece.
Can you go ahead and let people know what things looked like before you got sober?
Oh, yeah. Before I got sober, you know, I come from a typical background of someone in my position. You know, I grew up in a home where alcohol, drugs, and loud, obnoxious people were, you know, like, It felt like it was normal. And so growing up in an alcoholic and drug addict home, I took that into the world believing that that was completely normal. You know, both my parents, they would drink a lot. And I tried to stay away from it because as I got older and in high school and I would share some of like my home life with, you know, normal people, they're like, you know, this is not okay. And I was really embarrassed. So I did try to, I finished high school. I made sure that I was doing all the right things. I got a job, I got a loan on a car, got married, which was probably one of the biggest mistakes that I made. But I thought, you know, that's what normal people did. I just did all the normal things and I drank and I used once in a while, but I was trying not to because I just didn't want to be like my parents or like, you know, other relatives and friends that I grew up with. And there's nothing wrong with them. They're good people. They just have a problem. Well, anyways, as I'm going about life, just trying to do things right. My first husband was really abusive and I went through a lot with him. And he was the one who got me a lot of drugs and alcohol. He was much older than me. So he purchased my alcohol for me all the time. I figured I didn't want to be in that anymore, so I left him, started getting divorced, found out I was pregnant, and I had this beautiful little girl. I had never thought that I would love anything more than this child. It's like, I was going through all the steps in my life, didn't really know what I wanted in life. I didn't know who I was. I was struggling with my own mental health, but this little person, like, I really wanted to change for this little person, and I wanted to do things right. I wasn't, and I didn't know how to ask for help. And, I was a very shy, timid young girl, and I started drinking because that's how I knew how to cope with things. And, I was drinking and partying, and she was with me. And, eventually the state did get involved and take her from me, which at the time I feel like they should have helped me instead of immediately taking her from the home, like monitor me or something. I don't know. I felt like everything was just exaggerated, and I didn't have a good case manager. She thought that I was too much and that I had too much of a mouth on me, and that she just thought I was too much. So she wrote a lot of what she thought about me instead of the facts of what she observed. I was trying to fight that, and I was very upset. Long story short, she started getting sick because before my children, my two girls were taken from me, I did have another one in between all of this mess. I just didn't know how or what I was doing. Well, anyway, she started getting really sick before that she was taken. She had lupus and moyamoya, which is some kind of disease in the brain where like the blood vessels shrink. She ended up passing away in OCS care, and she had a huge stroke, and so she was in the hospital. And the hospital immediately called me because I'm her parent. I guess they weren't supposed to, but they called me, told me that she was in the hospital, so I rushed over there. And the case manager was there, and I walked in, and she looked at me angrily, and she's like, "You are not supposed to be here. What are you doing here?"
Oh my God.
And I was like, "Excuse me? They called me. My child is in the hospital. What happened?" And she's like, "I don't have to tell you anything." And I guess another case manager who was at the hospital saw this and heard this, and she's all like, "Excuse me, ma'am. I'm a case manager here." I can't remember exactly her title, but she was introducing herself, and she pretty much advocated for me to be able to go to the back and see my child. And so we did. I went back there. They made her leave because she was trying to stay in there and explain to them that I'm not allowed to be around her. And I remember hearing them, they were bickering, and they said that I have every right to be there with my child because they don't know if she's going to make it or not. That was like traumatizing because this case manager was not on my side at all. She just saw that I was an addict and I came from an addict home, and she thought I was dangerous to my child. And every other case manager I was working with since then said that my children don't. She doesn't believe that my children came from a home that was unloved or, abusive, just that I was drinking. And anyways, I was in the hospital for a few months with her. And in this time, I did not ask any of my family for help because I really didn't know how to. I didn't know who to turn to. I didn't know how to talk about it. I didn't know how to process it. I was very young. I was 22 when this happened. And so a few months go by, I'm sitting in the hospital with her, and I had permission to be with her the whole time. And I remember I took her outside right in the back of the hospital to walk around the park for a bit, because that's what her and I did all the time. We'd go outside a lot. And the case manager put an end to that. She made sure that I could not bring my child outside of those doors. And I tried to make passes and stuff so we could like go to a different park and watch the sunset and stuff. And anyway, I couldn't do any of that, and it really broke my heart. Finally, she passed away on 9/11, 2010, and it was 9 o'clock in the morning, exactly 9:15. I remember the time, and a time is never gonna. I'll never forget that time because everything just felt so numb, and I stayed that way for a long time. And the case manager, she was signing my other daughter out to a family member of mine, And the woman comes up to me and smirks in my face, and she says, "Well, are you going to be sober at the funeral?"
Oh my God.
And I could hear my cousin slam something down in the kitchen. And I looked at her. I was all like, "Yes, can you leave now?" And she was like, "Or else what?" And I was like, "Can you just please leave? Please leave." And she left, and we went to the funeral service. Everything was just, I just went through the motions, and I tried to hold it in, and I tried not to cry, and I tried to pretend like I was tough, and I went through all of this stuff, and family members hugging me, telling me she's in a better place now, and holding me and telling me I can't cry because that will keep her here with me. And I was just so angry, but I held it all together. And I went like that for months. I started working out like crazy, and I did drink a little bit, but I did not want, I felt it. If I started drinking, I wasn't going to stop. And I was right, because a couple months later, I started drinking, and I stayed in there for years. I drank from 2010 to 2013. I got arrested, getting into fights, got arrested a lot. So I was in and out of jail a lot, drinking, using, stealing, lying. That's how I lived for many years. I was homeless. But, you know, we move forward to 2015, and I'm finally starting to come out of it a little bit. And I know I want to do better, you know, because I don't want to keep using. You know, I'm struggling with it. So I have like a year and a half of sobriety. I almost hit 2 years, and I'm like a month away, and I'm so proud of myself. And then I had like this stressful job, and I looked at my boss because he was just like, he was mad about something and everybody was arguing. And he said that he just knew because the look on my face or something. I like walked out of there and I started drinking again. And fast forward to getting pregnant, I had my son, my first son. I wanted to do better. Like, you know, all the memories of all my past and being a mother the first time, like, I was really scared. I had him, and like, you know, once again, like a year after I had him, I started drinking and using again very heavily. And I'm lucky enough that my family stepped in and they took him from me. They kept him safe, and they knew I was struggling. They didn't want to judge me, I guess. And once again, I'm in and out of jail. I'm using too much, drinking too much, and I just am trying to kill myself at this point because, like, I can't do this. I can't be a mother. I'm never going to be good enough. And I kept telling myself all these negative things. And then I would feel guilty about what I did the night before, from getting drunk and using and, you know, acting like a fool and sleeping around, being just disgusting person that I could not stand looking at in the mirror. Where I went with that, I got arrested again, and I got a DUI. And my relationship is not working out with my kid's dad because, you know, I'm a selfish person. You know, I'm using, I'm cheating, I'm lying, I'm drinking, I'm not a safe parent. And then I wallow in this, and we break up, and I continue drinking, and I'm homeless because I lost everything again. You know, like, I lost my jobs, my vehicle, my home, all my belongings. I kept praying that something will come and save me, but I kept drinking, kept using. And I was lucky enough to have a couple friends who would let me sleep on their couch or sleep at their place. And I was still living on the street. And then finally, at the end of 2018, I got arrested for drinking and driving. And I had my kid's dad in a vehicle with me. They pulled me over, and I swear this cop was the nicest man ever, because I looked at him and I smiled. And I don't know why I was smiling at him, but I just knew that he was there to help me. And I was just like, he's like, "Well, ma'am, you know, I smell alcohol and you're swerving." We're the only ones on the highway, because it's like a day or two after the huge earthquake in November of 2018. And I was just like, "Yes, yeah, that was me." And he was just like, "Okay, you know, I'm going to have to arrest you, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, let's go." And I calmly got out, got into the vehicle. I hardly remember it, but I remember that much. And I don't really remember being booked in. I woke up next morning. I was very hungover, very drunk still, and I could feel the withdrawal starting to come on. and went to Highland. And I just, after I was done with my withdrawals, I remember my grandpa and my kid's dad telling me that they almost have enough money to bail me out, which is like $7,000 or something like that. And I was just like, I thought about it and I sat on it for a day or two. And then I called back and I told them that I just wanted to stay in there. I felt really guilty about bringing my partner along with me because I just, what if I got into an accident? What if he got hurt? What if he died? What if I hit somebody? And there's all those what ifs that were going in my head, and I just felt like an unsafe person at that time. And I sat in there, and I knew about this wellness court thing. I just kept insisting to my attorney that I needed some serious help, and I know that wellness court is something that I heard about and that it works for some people. And I just kept advocating for myself, and finally they were able to get me in, and I was accepted. And I prepared myself for 4 months, and I told myself that I needed to try all of these new things and do everything that they asked of me and do it for real, not just do it because I'm in trouble again. I wanted to do it for me. I got out and I started the program, and I told my kid's dad that I was like, look, I'm getting sober and I'm going to work this program and I'm going to get myself help. And I'm going to do this with or without you. We were still broken up at that time, and he was like, okay. And he was still drinking and using for his own for like a year or so. And but he watched me go through this program. He saw the changes in me. He saw me becoming me again. And I was doing all the things. I started crafting again. I started working out. I was working on my mental health, and I was like really putting in the work because I knew if I don't do this, I'm either going to end up killing myself or I'm going to end up killing somebody. And I didn't want any of that. I wanted my son, and I wanted him to grow up in a normal life with a normal mom who isn't drunk and who isn't using and who isn't just a worthless, person. And I didn't want that. I wanted him to grow up being normal and knowing that it's okay to make mistakes, but you can still recover. And I believe I did it, it's been 5 years now. The program has helped me in so many ways. Right now I'm taking UAA courses. I have a wonderful job. I work with our youth here in Alaska who need us, who need help, who need guidance. I work with Alaska Therapeutic Court still as a facilitator, and I run my meetings every couple times a month, and I stay on it. I'm not perfect still, I'm still dealing with my mental health because I still live with myself. But I use those tools that I learned to do something. I still work on a little bit of self-care if I can, or I'll clean my home, or I'll make myself a hat with yarn, or I'll bead myself something, or I'll bead some jewelry for other people. I keep taking this step forward because I know if I ever stop taking that step forward, then I'm going to fall and I may not get back up at this time. And I know that. I've already proven that to myself many times over so many relapses and so many broken promises. And this last time I didn't make any promises to myself or anybody else because I knew that I wasn't doing it for anybody.
Do you have a lot of sober support?
Yes, I do. And I stay with them. And one of my biggest things that I needed to do with my mental health too was setting boundaries and being very firm on those boundaries. So, I call people, or if they call me or text me, and if I'm not okay, I'm like, I'm not okay right now. And just simply saying that just takes all the weight off my shoulders. And and I can call anybody on my sober list and be like, I'm having a hard time right now, and I just really need to, like, even if I'm just on the phone breathing with them, that's enough for me. I'm not a people person. I don't like being around people. I don't like touch. So I'm very comfortable, like, in my home or like in the pandemic, I know a lot of people weren't comfortable, but me, I was loving it. I was just
Oh,
like, yes. Like I
yeah.
could, you could stay away from me. Like you are ordered to just stay out of my bubble. And it was great.
What drives your recovery now?
So learning about my culture, learning about my tribe, start to practice my native art, my native language, learning more about my history, and learning about generational trauma. That has helped my recovery a lot, because we all deal with generational traumas, and learning about that history has just made it a lot easier for me to understand a lot of my elders who are in my family who are not okay, who I don't think are, safe adults or safe people, but now I could understand because I know they didn't have it easy. In order to be that angry at life right now, there had to be something that happened, and knowing my own history and learning about my mother's history and my grandmother and getting a closer relationship with my dad, because him and I, my biological dad and I, have been working on our relationship for maybe 5 years now, and we never had a relationship. We're both in recovery and we're both healing and hunting, gathering, hanging out with family members when I can, staying close to my sober support, sharing my story. I run meetings, I'm a facilitator, and I try to just be as open as I can and share who I am, because I feel like hiding myself for so long and pretending like everything was okay was not working out for me, because I was using, drinking, my mental health was not okay. I wasn't working on anything really. I have a shopping addiction, so I'm gonna work on that a little bit. So I like to buy stuff. I love to drive. I am so happy that I got my limited license back. So I am allowed to drive, and one of my biggest things is road trips. I love going out in the summertime. I love fishing. I love hiking. I love in the winter times, I love being outside. I love snowboarding. I don't get to do it very often, but when I can, I feel it. Got to go on a vacation and I have this memory of surfing. And that guy, he wasn't supposed to be out there with me as long as he was, but we were out there for hours. And when I finally rode that wave from, the very beginning to the end, like that was the most amazing feeling I've ever had in my life. And just trying new experiences like that is what keeps me sober, because I know that I won't be living my life like this if I was using.
When you were talking about that case manager, sometimes that is what us as Native people run into. We run into racism still. We run into people that are just feeding into the stigma about Native people being drunk and dirty and uneducated people. But that's not who we are. We are strong. We have culture, and they need to know that. They need to realize that what they were taught with the stigma about Native people is wrong, and what you did was totally amazing. I applaud you for that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And yes, thank you for bringing up too the racism. Like that was another huge part of growing up, because like I wasn't born in the privilege. I was born as a young Native girl. I remember the first time that someone, it was when I first moved to the city. I must have been like 6 or 7 years old, but I specifically remember this person telling me that I was dirty and disgusting, told me to get away from them before I make them feel gross or something. And I was just like, whoa. And I carried that. And I think that's part of like why I always felt like I was dirty. And for some reason, when I was younger, I always felt like my culture was wrong and I was ugly and I'm unwanted and I'm dirty and I'm stupid. And those are the things that I believe, as a young child, because I my first run-in with racism was when I first moved here. And I still, oh my goodness, I still run into it everywhere. If I go to the grocery store, sometimes like I have, oh no, it wasn't at the grocery store, it was at the tire service place. This lady stood up, didn't even look at me, and she tried to ask the man behind me if he needed help, and he was embarrassed. He was like, this woman and her baby was here before me.
Oh,
So
jeez.
help them first. And She's like, "Oh, I'm sorry." And then she looked at me and asked me what I needed. And I'm like, "I'm here to get my tires changed. Thank you."
Oh, jeez. Yeah. And it's not only in recovery or, I did a episode on missing and murdered Indigenous women and Indigenous people, and the way they portray the law enforcement, how they portray, Native people, how the media portray them. I mean, they always mention, either alcohol use or drug use or, or them being homeless, like it's their fault. And that's something that we need to talk about, especially in recovery too, the stigma, or else it's just going to be swept under the rug like always, This conversation needs to happen. And thank you so much for going to our state capitol and letting them know, Yeah, that is totally amazing. Heather, what would you say to someone who is struggling right now? How would you encourage them?
When I was first in recovery, the one thing I was struggling with was loving myself and gratitude. So what helped me was the little things, looking at the little things that I can be grateful for, whether it was I had food today or the weather is not so bad today, it's not raining and the skies are clear, or just I rested last night. I started off with little things like that. And then I started looking in the mirror and I started loving myself. So I would say gratitude and learn to really love yourself. Once you learn to love and respect yourself, that shows you how to teach other people to love and respect you. And then from there, everything, as crazy as it may seem, those little things really help and those little things really add up.
Yeah. Heather, I want to thank you so much for you being here and sharing your story. You don't know how much this means to me. Man, I really, really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I really hope to keep doing this, like I got the ball rolling. I want to keep moving forward. I've always wanted to be someone who can stand up and speak and share my story and inspire other people who have been in my shoes that they can do it too, that they have a voice. Because if I did not step out and find my voice, I wouldn't be here right now. I really can't tell you where I'd be. I probably wouldn't even still be alive right now if it wasn't for that. So yes, thank you so much for allowing me to share my story with you and every single one of your listeners.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who's walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project Saturdays at 8:30 a.m. on 95.5 FM WART, the voice of Madison County, serving Madison County, North Carolina. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.